This is the NC Everything Podcast, a show where we talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Hey guys, and welcome to episode 20 of the podcast where we talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. I'm your host, Curtis, and if you're new to the show, this is a weekly podcast where we literally talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Now, not all in one show. I pick a featured topic, and so far I've done stuff like Bigfoot and Blackbeard, and if you stumbled into this podcast and you're curious about it, go to my website at www.thencEverythingPodcast.com, and there you can find all my old episodes, the previous 19, and you can find show notes for the episodes. And for you people who keep coming back, if you hadn't been to the website, well, check it out. I've added a picture of myself, and I touched it up a little bit since New Year's. And if you've never visited the show notes, there you can find links to all my sources. You can check out the web pages, and I also post pictures that have something to do with whatever I'm talking about. And speaking of what I'm talking about, today's episode is Moorhead Planetarium, and that's closer to my home in Orange County. Now, I realize a lot of you may have never heard of the Moorhead Planetarium, and that's okay. It's kind of an old building on the University of North Carolina campus at Chapel Hill, and I'm from this area, so I have some fond memories there. But I'll save my recollections of the planetarium toward the end of the show. Now, I know normally I have a little bit of blah, blah, blah at the beginning of each episode, and I'll tell you something about this, that, or other, but I actually have a lot of material to cover today. I don't think it's going to be too long of an episode, but I have a lot in my notes here, so I figured we'd just go ahead and get started. So, the Moorhead Planetarium is named after John Moorhead III, and that's why I wanted to go ahead and jump into it, because to tell you about John Moorhead III, I want to tell you about John Moorhead II and the First. So this story really starts in 1796 in Virginia. That's when John Motley Moorhead I was born. Now, on the surface, it may seem like the first Moorhead isn't that important, and maybe to the planetarium he isn't, but for Moorhead III, this is kind of his legacy, and I think I really need to give you some backstory. By the way, if the Moorheads have anything to do with Moorhead City, I couldn't find it in my notes, and I will be saying Moorhead all through this damn episode, so just hang in there. Okay, back to it. John Motley Moorhead I was born in Virginia in 1796. He moved to Rockingham County in North Carolina in 1798, and that was when he was 2 years old. So really, I doubt he even remembers being a Virginian, and that's probably not such a bad thing. Fast forward some years, and John graduated from the University of North Carolina in 1817, and then he began studying law, and he passed the bar in 1819. He represented Rockingham County in the House of Commons during the 1821 session, and he represented Guilford County in the House of Sessions during the sessions of 1826 to 27 and 27 to 28. It wasn't long after that he became a delegate in the Carolina Constitutional Convention of 1835. And in 1840, he won what he's probably most notable for, and that was the governor of North Carolina. Now, he got that in 1840 and in 1842. Now, while he was governor, he had a lot of emphasis on improving the railroad development and building highways and improving navigation throughout the state, pretty much. And also, he established a school of the deaf in Raleigh. Now, that school of the deaf eventually started letting in children who were blind, and eventually they sprung off into their own school exclusively for blind children, and that school actually is named Moorhead after him. Eventually, he became the president of the North Carolina Railroad and a promoter of the Atlantic and North Carolina Railroad and the Western North Carolina Railroad. Man, that's a lot to say. Anyway, during the 1850s, this is where most of his time was devoted to the railroads. Now, in 1858 and 59, he was back in the House of Commons for Guilford County. Then in 1860 to 1861, he was in the Senate. Now, in 1861, February to be exact, He served as a delegate to the Abortive Peace Conference. It was held in Washington, and they were hoping to kind of hold off the Civil War that ultimately came. Now, once North Carolina seceded from the Union and became a Confederate state, he resigned from the Senate. He joined the Confederate cause and became a delegate to the Confederate Provisional Congress during 1861 to 1862. Now, unfortunately for him, this joining of the Confederacy pretty much ended his political career. Now let's move on to Morehead II. Now, John Motley Morehead II is the grandson of John Motley Morehead I. He was born in 1866 in Charlotte. He eventually spent 2 years as a clerk in the Commercial National Bank of Charlotte. This was followed by 2 years in the leaf tobacco business in Durham. Now, his father and his uncle, they owned a textile firm called the James Turner Morehead Company, and in 1893 to 94, the partnership of his father and his uncle kind of dissolved. After this, a lot of the properties were sold to the Spray Water Power and Land Company in Spray, North Carolina. Well, the reason I tell you that is because at this point, Morehead II became a partner in the new James T. Morehead Company and a chief executive officer in the Leakesville Woolen Mills. Now, one interesting thing about the Leakesville Woolen Mill is it's the oldest woolen mill in continuous service in the South. Now, Morehead II stayed with this company until he died. In 1908, Morehead became politically active as a Democrat, but eventually he changed his affiliation to a Republican candidate, and this was so he could run for the 5th North Carolina District in the congressional election of 1908. Well, he won that election, and he became a member of the 61st Congress. Now, he refused to seek a second term, and instead he served as a chairman of the State Republican Executive Committee. In 1916, he was elected to the National Republican Committee, but eventually he resigned. Later, he tried to get into the U.S. Senate. This was in 1918, but eventually he lost his bid for that. He also tried to run as a candidate from the 9th Congressional District for the U.S. House of Representatives in 1919, but he lost his bid for that seat too. Now, don't get too hung up in the politics. That's not really what this episode's about. I just wanted to establish kind of the line of Moreheads. Oh, by the way, Morehead II eventually graduated from UNC in 1886. So there's your second Morehead graduate from UNC. And finally, let's get on to the third UNC graduate from the Morehead family. This was John Motley Morehead III. And this is where the planetarium story really, really starts taking off. I mean, essentially, once he becomes educated. But before I get all into that, he was born in 1870 in Spray, North Carolina. And now, the reason I keep saying Spray, North Carolina is, unfortunately, I had never heard of Spray until I'd done this research. That's S-P-R-A-Y. I don't know if it's a small town, but it's not too awful far from me, so I might have to take a little ride over there. Anyway, he's also the grandson of Morehead I, the governor of North Carolina. Now, he graduated from UNC in 1891, and he had a degree in chemical engineering. Now, he eventually became a chemist for the Wilson Aluminum Company, and this was his father's company that had been founded in Spray. And the main reason his father opened this this aluminum company is he was trying to find a new way to produce aluminum. Now, the Morehead family are just constantly doing notable things, you know, like running for the governor and running for the Senate. And I say this because at this Wilson Aluminum Company, Morehead's father, he installed one of the first electric arc furnaces in the United States. And what's more, on May 2nd, 1892, while operating it, they stumbled onto the first large-scale commercial means of producing calcium carbide. Now, eventually, the company business started really lacking. And so Morehead's father set up for him to stay in New York for a while, and he arranged a job for him at a bank up in New York. But he didn't stay in New York too long. Eventually, he got a job at the Westinghouse Electric in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And while there, he went through the experts course, the quote-unquote experts course. I guess it's like in-house training. But he went through the course and graduated from it in 1895. Now, the following year, Westinghouse put him with the Consolidated Traction Company in New Jersey. Now, during 1899, he designed a machine for analyzing gases, and this soon became the standard equipment in industrial laboratories. And in 1900, he published his Analysis of Industrial Gases. So as you can see, this wasn't no dumb guy. And obviously, he wasn't very lazy either. He didn't like to sit still for very long. I mean, eventually, he became an engineer for a company called Carbide Interest, and while there, he became the chief chemist. Well, eventually, World War I broke out, and he volunteered. Now, he was actually overaged when he volunteered, but they still gave him a commission as a major in the Army. And almost immediately, he was detailed to the War Industries Board as chief of the Industrial Gases and Gas Production Section. So I guess they heard he was a chemist. Now, eventually, when he got out of the Army, or at least got done with that part, he moved to Rye, New York. And this was so he could be near the Carbide Corporation Laboratories at Niagara Falls in Long Island. He served 3 terms as mayor of Rye between 1925 and 1930 while he was up there. Also, in 1930, President Herbert Hoover appointed him as minister to Sweden. And while in Sweden in 1931, he was awarded the gold medal of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. And he's actually the only foreigner to ever receive this award. Now, let's get back to Morehead and UNC. Now, John Morehead III felt like he owed all of his life's successes to UNC for giving him the education he had. And he really wanted to give back to UNC as kind of a payment or a thank you for giving him such an education. So, in 1931, he and his cousin, R.L. Patterson, presented the Morehead Patterson Bell Tower to the University of North Carolina. Now, like I said, UNC is not far from my house, so I've walked the campus a lot. I wouldn't say I know it by heart, but I know it pretty good. I don't expect all of you to know anything about the bell tower. I'll try to link to a picture of it in the show notes. It's a college bell tower. It's cool looking, and it sounds cool when it goes off every day. In 1945, he created the John Motley Morehead Foundation at the university. But I guess to him, that still wasn't enough. He wanted to give UNC one big present. And boy, did he ever. In 1938, he met with then UNC president Frank Porter Graham to talk about the planetarium. He was hoping to give the campus something really cool. I mean, I doubt he said cool back then, but he wanted to give them something cool and amazing that they could use for learning, not just something pretty to look at. And if you've never heard of the word planetarium, it's a dome-shaped theater where there's a type of projector that I'm going to talk about in a minute. And it puts on shows like over top of your head and all around you. It's almost like a precursor to those 4D rides at the beach. Except in a planetarium, you don't get shot in the face with water and your chairs don't move. But it is pretty amazing. Well, anyway, I don't think they really struggled for money or popularity. So it didn't take them long to convince UNC to let them build this planetarium for them. It took 17 months to build it. And it was actually only the 8th one built in the U.S. It was the first one built in the South. And it was also the first one ever built on a college campus. Also, and I thought this was pretty cool, it was designed by the same architects who designed the Jefferson Memorial, as well as several other buildings in Washington, D.C. Now, back then, it cost about $3 million to build, and that's about $30 million in today's money. And in the middle of this auditorium, there's a projector manufactured by a German company. There's a projector in the middle of it manufactured by a German company called Zeiss. That's Z-E-I-S-S. Now, the best I could tell, they only made planetarium projectors, this company, Zeiss. However, during World War II, they lost most of their factories, so these projectors, they were kind of hard to come by. But Morehead III, he went over to Sweden, where he had been many times before, and he purchased a Zeiss Model 2. Now everything was set up and ready to go, and the planetarium was officially dedicated on May 10th, 1945. Now, at this dedication party, they had a lot of big heads, and this included Senator Frank Porter Graham, Governor Carr Scott, the acting university president at that time, William Carmichael, and the University Chancellor, Robert House. After the dedication ceremony, all the guests were invited to come watch the planetarium's very first show. It was called Let There Be Light, and it was narrated by director of the planetarium, Roy K. Marshall. Now, for a lot of you people local to the Orange County area and big fans of the planetarium, you might know a lot of their shows by heart. I know a lot of their shows, but I don't have all of them memorized. But several of their shows became really famous, including The Star of Bethlehem. It came out in 1949. I have actually seen this show when I was on a field trip with my school, I think in the second or third grade, but the show was revised several times. I don't know which revision I seen, but they retired the show in 2011. All right, going back, 1956, Moorhead pays for a huge sundial to go out in front of the planetarium, and this sundial is humongous. Again, I'll try to post a link to the picture of it in the show notes. If you're ever walking around campus, you can't miss the planetarium or this giant sundial out in front of it. Oh, as a side note, on the, I guess it would be the eastern side of the planetarium, there's a arboretum. It's a really pretty garden. If I'm not mistaken, this was Elijah Mitchell's personal garden when he was a professor at UNC. And this Elijah Mitchell, that's how Mount Mitchell got its name. So if you ever do visit the planetarium, definitely walk through the arboretum. Anyway, back to the subject. In 1959, that's when the astronaut training started. This was 10 years after the planetarium officially opened, but the space program was really heating up, and they decided that the planetarium would be a fantastic way to train the astronauts. And they weren't wrong. Now, most of what the astronauts did here was study the stars, and that was in case they lost their navigation equipment and they had to kind of get home blindly. And I read somewhere that by the time a lot of these astronauts finished their training, they knew the stars better than most astrologers. Well, between 1960 and 1975, almost every astronaut who participated in the Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Skylab, and Apollo-Soyuz programs trained at Moorhead. All in all, they trained 62 astronauts at the Moorhead Planetarium. Sadly, Moorhead III died in 1965, kind of right in the middle of all this training. He had broken his hip while he was running to catch a train to ride New York, and he died about a month later. Now, back to the astronauts, just one kind of last thing. I thought it was kind of interesting or kind of funny. To keep the astronauts' presence in Orange County a secret, they scheduled the astronauts' training time as cookie time. Now, me personally, if I was looking through the calendar and I seen, you know, this show and that show and all of a sudden cookie time, I think that would raise more questions than if they had just put training time. Oops, that's not the last thing about the astronauts. Keep in mind, I took all these notes. I didn't memorize my notes. I'm scrolling through as I go through the show. In 1969, a new Zeiss projector was brought into the planetarium. This was the Zeiss 6. Now, Neil Armstrong was actually the first person to train on the Zeiss 6. And hopefully you know who he is, but he was the first man to walk on the moon. Anyway, the Zeiss 6 remained in operation until April of 2011. Now, sadly, the need for the planetarium as a training facility kind of shut down in 1975. That was mainly because NASA started using space shuttles and they started using computerized navigation. Oh, and by the way, if you're not into space stuff, before they were using space modules, and that's the kind of cone-shaped thing, you know, it's the weird-looking, fake-looking moon lander and all that. Space shuttles replaced the space module. Well, in 1973, one of the final ideas that John Motley Moorhead III had came to fruition. Now, he passed away in 1965, but he had an idea to open up an east wing on the Moorhead building. And in 1973, that's exactly what happened. Inside this east wing is the Moorhead Observatory. And this is a 24-inch Schmidt Cassegrain telescope, and it's operated by the UNC Department of Physics and Astronomy. Now, I actually didn't know this thing was up there. There is a smaller second dome on the east side of the building, but I never really knew what it was for or that regular people were even allowed to go up there. But apparently, every Friday night during the academic season, you can make a reservation and go up and use the observatory. In 1989, a lot of the astronauts returned to the Moorhead Planetarium to celebrate the planetarium's 40th anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the Mercury program, and the 20th anniversary of the moon landing. Now, in 1989, I was 6 years old and probably never heard of any of these people, but I still think it would have been really cool to be there for this. Well, in 2000, the John Motley Moorhead Planetarium was rechristened to become the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center, and this was to reflect an expanded mission. You see, they wanted to expose kids and, well, all audiences to fields like genetics, virtual reality, concussion research, and nanotechnology. And they were moving right along with this goal because in May of 2003, they came out with a new show called DNA, The Secret of Life. And in 2010, a company called GlaxoSmithKline, they gave a gift to the Moorhead Planetarium. Now, what they did was they paid to have the auditorium converted to full dome digital technology. And because of this gift, they renamed the theater again in GlaxoSmithKline's honor. And as a result of this, in 2011, the Moorhead Planetarium decommissioned the Zeiss 6 star projector after 42 years of service. And that is all I have for the Moorhead Planetarium. I feel like I rushed through that. I hope I didn't talk too fast. It seemed like a lot of information. I do want to tell you that I visited the planetarium years ago. Like I said earlier, I think I was in second or third grade. And it was the most amazing thing I had ever seen in my entire life. And years went by. And, you know, I see the planetarium every time I ride through UNC, but I don't really stop in. I don't know why, because it was really amazing. But eventually it occurred to me that I want to go back and I want to see a planetarium show. And so I got on their website and looked up their schedule and I went to go watch. I don't remember what I watched. But guess what? It was still the most amazing thing I had ever seen in my entire life. Now, if you ever get a chance to go, obviously the shows are pretty incredible. But you got to go see what I would call the catacombs. Now, when you go in the main door to the planetarium, you'll see the gift shop and you'll see the auditorium doors. There's actually a kind of a tight stairwell that's kind of back behind you to the right. And it's not private. You're allowed to go down there. But it's like a basement level of the planetarium. But you go through these hallways and they really do remind me of catacombs. Now, when you get down there, besides a bathroom and water fountain, all through this hallway, they have all kinds of displays about the solar system and the moon. And there's a kind of a mock-up of some moonlanders down there. Now, it changes from time to time, but it's still a really cool place to go. And the hallway just kind of circles back around onto itself. It probably takes about, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes to walk the whole thing. It's not very far, but if you do visit the planetarium, don't miss the catacombs. And if I remember, I'll leave a link to their website on my show notes so you can kind of check their schedule out. And I'm not sure how they're going to be with the COVID-19 stuff, but I do think the last time I went by there, they looked like they were open. And speaking of the website, my website is www.thencEverythingPodcast.com. And there, like I said at the beginning of the show, you can check out all my past episodes. You can check out the show notes. You can see a few pictures. More importantly, though, you can contact me through the website. There's a contact button, and if you click that, you'll see the email address for the show, and there's a few other ways to contact me. And if you're interested in subscribing to the show, you can see a list if you click how to listen. You can see a list of all the different platforms I'm available on. And if you did like the show, definitely comment, reach out and let me know you loved it, or let me know you hated it. Or even better, you can suggest ideas for future shows. But I can't wait to hear from you, and thanks for listening. And with that being said, I'll talk to you later. music in this episode comes from archesaudio.com and freepd.com.